Okay, so let's do this. We're here in the Hakdamah to the Sefer HaChinuch. We pointed out that Hakdamahs are a good opportunity. We'll see how many Hakdamahs we're going to do over the course of time, or how we're going to do things in this Friday. Again, it was a big success this year that we went through the Ramban's Hakdamahs. I really enjoyed it. I think others did too. So now we're going through the Sefer HaChinuch's Hakdamah. And again, if you're writing a Hakdamah on a Sefer HaMitzvah, so it's going to be a very central Hakdamah to Kol HaTorah Kula. Obviously, if you're writing a Sefer that's less broad, so then the Hakdamahs might be less broad. But when you're writing a Hakdamah to the Sefer HaMitzvah, so it's essentially a Hakdamah to Kol HaTorah Kula, which makes it very, very interesting. So what we saw last time was this concept that's accepted in the world called Eidus, testimony, that the way we decide, virtually every society has decided whether things happen, is based on what's called Eidus, what we call an eyewitness. We started last time, though, focusing on the problem over here, that eyewitnesses, even though it's the best type of Eidus that we have, but there's a flaw in that Eidus, right? Which is, in essence, you're watching something from the outside. There have been some very big tricks done in Jewish history, world history. Harry Houdini was a famous magician. There were, and people could do all sorts of things that when I saw them when I was a kid, they looked very real and I had no idea how they did them. You know, they take swords and they put a person in a box, right? You see his head and they're sticking swords in left and right. And then they're even moving the boxes around. It looks like they're rearranging his body. Right, Yuri, you've seen things like that? Yuri? Anybody seen that? Has anyone ever seen that in person? Anyone in the group?
Yeah.
Who, yes, Ruben?
Yeah.
Labe, you saw it? Labe, you saw such a thing?
Yes.
So it looks very real. Obviously not real. It's obviously not real. That's the whole point of magic. And, you know, you have these from magicians who they, Alpi Halacha, actually have to tell you before, hi, I'm a magician, and this is all sleight of hand. It's actually usher. According to the Rambam has a fascinating shita on black magic. There's actually a big machlokas Rishonim whether or not there is such a thing as black magic. The approach of all the Mekubalim, including the Ramban, is that, of course, black magic is real. It's a real, and the Vilna Gaon, right? The Vilna Gaon also. Of course, black magic is real. It's a, it's something about, and the Ramchal, Kochos HaTuma in the world, Hashem gave us a world that could be manipulated and you could achieve certain results with that world. Amazing, crazy results you could do. And if anyone's been to the Far East and you've heard about people who were in these countries like Thailand, there are still people there who can do all sorts of tricks. And it very much is in sync with the Torah, that such a thing could happen. Again, it's an avera for us to do it, but if we would see somebody, with fire coming out of their mouth or suspended in air, such things wouldn't faze us. If they have an old Masorah, which they do in black magic, so then they probably could do some interesting things. Now, but there's a machlokas Rambam and Mekubalim, essentially, whether the black magic is real. According to the Mekubalim, black magic is essentially a real experience that you're watching. Kind of like what the Khartoumim did with the Makas. They were able to replicate things, even though they were not working with obviously with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they were manipulating kochos that Hashem put into the world to achieve certain things until they basically got stumped, right? Once they hit Kinim, right? So once it became smaller than a Sa'ira, so black magic can't fall on there, definitely seems to indicate from the Pashim shot of the Chazal that black magic is real. However, the Rambam takes a different position over here in the world of black magic. And the Rambam holds that black magic is the iser of sleight of hand. Actually giving over the impression that you're doing magic is the Avera according to the Rambam. The Rambam does not hold that there is real mamushas to black magic. It is all sleight of hand, but he holds actually the Avera in black magic is giving over a false impression. So I'm using this as an example to prove that sleight of hand is a reality to the eye. The eye is not as fast as these people's hands. And therefore, the conclusions that people make based on the eye can be inaccurate. So we're going in stages over here. On the one hand, we're agreeing that the best way to validate something on planet Earth is through testimony. But on the other hand, we are recognizing that even the eyes could be misleading. There could be, you think you're seeing one thing and you're seeing something entirely different. That's really the idea over here. So aside from having 600,000 mature adult men who saw at Har Sinai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and millions of women and children, still, Gam Lamantia Edis Yoser Chazak of Edembara, back inside, Zachu Kulam Lamailas HaNevua. Here we have a whole different ball game. We have something called Nevua. That means everybody got prophecy over here. So we have to really understand what prophecy is. Obviously, it's going to be hard for me to explain prophecy because I've never had it. I've never experienced it. And nobody in this shir, as far as I know, is a Navi. Nevi'im were Nisbatel at the end of Bayis Rishon with Chagai, Zechariah, and Malachi. And there's no more Nevuah anymore. There used to be actually millions of Nevi'im in Klal Yisrael, even though we only have a few Sifrei Tanakh of Nevi'im, Yishaya, Yechezkel, Treyasar, right, Yirmiyahu. That's only because the message of those Nevi'im was Lidiris. And therefore, there was a Sivui of the Navi to make the Nevuah Lidiris, and it became part of Tanakh. But there were, in fact, millions of Nevi'im, Kifle Kiflaim Yotzi Mitzrayim, Chazal say, millions of Nevi'im at the time of the Beis HaMikdash. They're kind of, you know, if you want a mushel, a bad mushel, of course, but a mushel nonetheless, if you could picture like Nevuah is kind of like there's a wave available, like when you have a phone, right? So you know that there are waves in the air. The biggest proof is that if you turn on your phone, it's got those bars and it's showing you that there's something actually in your Dalet Amos that's allowing you to connect somewhere. You can't see it. You don't know what it is or where it is. You know it's there. It must be in your vicinity, right next to your phone, waves that allow you to connect to the other side of the world. And multiple waves, because also if you check, if you have a phone with internet capability or a computer, you can check how many different options you have for those waves. And then aside from that, you can decide to look for radio waves and all other types of waves. So there are a lot of things in the world that you can't see. And Nevuah was something that was available to get. At that time, there were waves of Nevuah. It was a presence in the world at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, where people could get prophecy today it's impossible. Even if you are someone who is the holiest person, even on this on the level of a Tana, even on the level of a Nabi. I mean, it's ridiculous to say such a thing, but let's say we had such a person, he would not be able to get Nevuah. Even the Vilna Gaon at his time turned down Magidim, which were angels that wanted to give him Divrei Torah. He turned down those angels because he told Rav Zelmel of Elazhin also to turn down Malachim. It's kind of, we would feel like that's the greatest honor to get a chavrusa with a malach. The Vilna Gaon actually asked Malachim to leave when they would come. He would ask them to leave. And he told Rav Zelmel to do the same. Rav Zelmel of Elazhin was the brother of Rav Chaim Elazhin, who was an awe-inspiring individual, so awe-inspiring that people thought that he was on the level of the Vilna Gaon. And Rav Chaim Elazhiner, who was the Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, was very upset about that. He said the famous lines that my brother Reb Zelmel knows Kula Torah Kula like we would know Ashrei. You just start him off and he'll just see you in 35 years as he just rattles off Kula Torah Kula, maybe even 1,000 years, whatever. He says, but the Vilna Gaon knows the Torah backwards and forwards. No one can start Ashrei backwards. It says the Vilna Gaon knew Kula Torah Kula backwards. Now, if we would even try to understand the difference between those two, I don't want to do it right now, but you can't even compare that level of knowledge. Backwards and forwards it's not even comparable, and I don't want to discuss it right now because not our topic. However, the Vilna Gaon was worried that the Malach who comes in Chutz La'aretz, at his time, the Malach that was coming, he felt there was also waves of Tumah that were interfering, and he would not get an accurate chavrusa with the Malach. So they asked him that the Beis Yosef had a chavrusa with a Malach. You can actually buy the sefer of the chavrusa with the Malach. It's in stores. It's the Magid Meisharim, and they had a chavrusa. That was the Beis Yosef. So the Vilna Gaon said that a Malach in Eretz Yisrael is okay. There's enough Kedusha to Eretz Yisrael that the Malach is not affected. The wave or whatever experience you're getting with the Malach is full, and you don't have to be worried about Kochas HaTumah. Now that has nothing to do with prophecy. That's a form, if you will, of Ruach HaKodesh. But that is in no way, can't even be compared to the level of prophecy. Prophecy is something entirely different. So even the Vilna Gaon wouldn't take a chavrusa with a malach at his time. And most certainly, it's an impossibility to get a wave of nevuah. You need the hashras hashchina of the Beis HaMikdash for such a thing. Ruvain Frank, you have a question, my friend?
Yeah, quick question. The reason why the Vilna Gaon didn't want to learn with the Malach is because of the Keichas HaTumah, or because he wanted to be Amal and Taira?
There are different versions, but it seems like at least why he told Rav Zelmela, meaning he had to explain to Rav Zelmela why he cannot accept a Magid. I guess he knew that Rav Zelmel was right to a Magid, and it maybe even had offers to learn the Chavrusa with the Malach. So that he could not, I don't want to, say without the sources in front of me, but it could be that these two things are both true. Meaning, and again, we'll look in the books, there are different versions of this, but there are two points. One is not to take the Malach because of Kochas HaTumah, that's one version. Another one is that the Vilna Gaon was interested in Amalilus Matera, but I don't know if they're coming from the same source. Both testimonies, if they're coming from the same source or not, I can't tell you. I do know the Vilna Gaon had Chavrusas with Eliyahu HaNavi, but that's different. Eliyahu is not a Malach. Eliyahu is like a regular Chavrusa. The reason is because Eliyahu never died, so it's kind of like getting an early Chavrusa from an earlier generation that's still alive. That's a very interesting thing to think about, why Eliyahu is different. even though we call him Eliyahu Melech HaBris. But Rav Elchanan Wasserman talks about this, that Eliyahu wears different hats. And he's if you have a chavrusa with Eliyahu, you're meeting a real live Eliyahu who comes in and out of this world. But yes, there is such a Mesorah that the Vilna Gaon did not want to use Malachim because of, you know what, let's look in the Safer Ditzniusa. One second, please. Let's see what we have, if the Eilim can be relaxed here, because it's a relaxed environment. You're in my house, so we might as well take out the Safra. Probably the most authentic, not probably, one of the most authentic accounts of the Vilna Gaon we have is in the introduction of the Vilna Gaon of Rav Chaim Volozhiner to the Gaon's Perish on the Safer Ditzniusa. And I'm just going to check over here for a second. See if we have anything here. Yeah, Reuven, I'll try B'Yishuv Hadas to get the different girsons for you on this story. But this is definitely a Makor Neman that I'm telling you. I just don't want to take the time now. So we have this concept of Nevuah, right? Nevuah is a different reality that we don't know about. If you would try to explain Nevuah to someone, it's kind of like explaining to them, imagine somebody who's never seen, someone who's blind, and you're trying to describe to them a tree and the majestic colors of the fruit and the sunset. Does anyone here have any experience with blind people from birth? Shragi?
Yeah.
You do?
I do. Froggy,
who do you know who's blind from birth?
I worked in Camp Simcha, and there's a few people that are there.
And did you ever have any conversations with them about it or no?
I had a conversation with this guy from Derech Or Sameach.
Yeah.
He was blind. He was actually born able to see, but he had cancer in his eyes. And then he, or something like that, and he couldn't, so he lost his sight after, like, the first year. So he couldn't see him again.
But wow, Rachman or Tlan.
But yeah, he said he doesn't really, yeah. He said other people tried. He's like, he doesn't really know, doesn't understand the concept.
Right, it's a concept that you're not aware of. If you would have a sense that's a different sense, so you can't comprehend it. Nevuah is like a different sense. It's entering a totally different world of understanding. Now, the reason that's important for us right now is because to me and you, we're thinking, what's the difference between an eyewitness and a prophet? No, a prophet is someone who sees things clearer than anyone could have ever imagined. And it's not something, when you get prophecy, you can't doubt it. It's not something that's doubtable. It's an unquestionable experience. So says the Sefer HaChinuch over here, Gam l'mantia yidis yosre razakum ne'mon razakum kulam l'malas ha'nevua l'vishem ha'mashim vadim yitzad ha'nevua nofel safik la'olam. The nevua is not something that can be doubted. Now, it's something that we haven't experienced, but that's part of the definition of nevua. Is certainty. It's from the one thing I will tell you that I do think is valuable for Nevuah is that sight is from the outside. You're witnessing something from the outside. Nevuah is seeing something from the inside. It's actually seeing something from the inside, which is not something that we can really do, obviously. Klomer, Hemu, Bnei, Ma'olam, Yaminu, Bechab, Nivuaska. they're going to all believe in your prophecy. Now, this is a major point here. They're going to know that Hashem speaks to humans. This is the first point, and I want to address this. The Sefer Kuzari, Rabbi Yehuda Alevi, actually says that this was the missing link that Klal Yisrael did not, they were skeptical of this. You know, we think that after all the Makos and after all of the Kriyas Yamsuf, everything should be clear. It was clear on some level, but there was a big gaping hole for them. Could it be that Moshe never spoke to Hashem? I mean, we know that Moshe understood what was going to happen in the world, and maybe he was the most amazing person ever, but known to mankind. But is it possible that a human being could speak to Hashem? That was something that nobody could know. Who could know that? You can't know if Moshe was speaking to Hashem. You can know that he was spot on every time, you know, like everything he said came true. But you could not know if he really spoke to Hashem. There's only one way to know if human beings could speak to Hashem. Now, why is that an issue? Because if you think about it, it makes no sense that a human being should speak to Hashem. Imagine an ant, okay? Being able to have a conversation with a human being, okay? That makes no sense. And now multiply that by a gazillion. It makes no sense that a human being should have a relationship with Hashem. We're Yalud Isha, we're flesh and blood, we're nothing, we're garnished, we're worms, we're everything you want to say that's not whatever, you know, we know what we are, unfortunately. Let's not be sad on Erev Shabbos. It doesn't make sense that a human being should speak to Hashem or have a dialogue with Hashem. That doesn't make sense. So therefore, any thinking person, even after they saw the Makos, could in fact doubt whether this was a possibility. And the only way to show this to people was for them to have a conversation, or at least to get talked to by Hashem. So that was the first thing. And that's the pasuk I'm quoting to you over here. Hashem could speak to a man and he could live. Now that's a fascinating thing. Aside from just speaking to Hashem, it's that you could survive that experience. Meaning maybe somebody could, somebody could have a conversation with Hashem, but they would be vaporized in the process. How could anyone live through such a process? That also you could doubt. And we experienced it, meaning every person was zocha to nevuah at Har Sinai. And therefore, they now knew, stage one, they knew that that a man can have a conversation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And next week, we'll talk Bli Neder about how that legitimized Moshe Rabbeinu one step after that. But the first step that needed to be legitimized was, in fact, this Nekuda, that man could have a conversation with Hashem and survive such a thing. Everyone should have a wonderful Shabbos, as early Shabbos is closing in on me, and I did not daven mincha, but I have plenty of time, a good 25 minutes. Everyone, please, all the yeshuas and all the brachas, and a good Shabbos to everyone.